And away we go. Time once again for Friday, American Hit Friday, Radio.
Friday.
Triple happy hour. Friday, 5 p.m.
Friday.
And time for American Hit Radio. Hi, folks. I'm Tom Ryan. Been your host for quite a while now, doing this on Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6. And as well as my wife has been doing this for quite a while. For, wow, you've been...
14 years?
No, I'd say more.
15 years?
Yeah, quite a while.
16 years?
Decade and a half, something like that. She's the newbie. She's the newbie of the group.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been working our way through a series for the past few weeks now, which we're calling Transistor Days. It's a really fun series where we're trying to basically tell the story of great pop music from 1955, January 55, up till the end of 69. I'm calling it Transistor Days because this was the age when you'd be listening to pop music on your AM radio. You could take to the beach and that sort of thing. And what I enjoy most about this whole thing, really, this radio encapsulation thing that we do, is we get to crush time into these encapsulations. We try to cover...
You get a real sense for the space that you're in with this music.
I hope you do. I hope you do.
I think so.
I love to hear you say that because that's exactly what we're trying to do. With each show, because we're doing them chronologically, you can feel us moving through time. And in 1 hour, we're more or less moving you through 4, 5, 6 months of great pop music. So that's what we're doing. And at this point in time, we're up to the spring, into the summer of 1962. This is part 20 in our Transistor Days series. And like the past few shows, rock and roll seems to have vanished for an extent of time. And you get this intoxicating mix of rhythm and blues and country music, which started to monopolize the American music charts around this time. And I must admit that I genuinely miss when the pop charts were this diverse and full of incredible songs good enough to last an entire lifetime.
I think we both do.
Right?
There's something wonderful about that time that you can just hear such a diversity of music.
Imagine
all in one place.
Turn on the radio, you'd hear Roy Orbison. You'd say, okay, it's a country artist, a dramatic pop artist. And then you'd hear Ray Charles on the exact same station and the same show.
Yeah.
You know, there was a sense of symmetry to the music. Even though each artist, you know, represented something different, it seemed like everybody listened to and appreciated each other. You'd hear how people were like taking ideas from Ray Charles, taking ideas from Roy Orbison. The two of them sharing ideas with, you know, probably just by listening. Rarely has pop music been as essential as it was in 1962. So let's kick it off right away with a song by Sam Cooke. He's going to be our, I guess we could say, our featured artist of the show because he actually comes up more than once for a change. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, Sam Cooke with Twistin' the Night Away.
Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way where the people are so gay. Twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun, putting trouble on the run. Man, you find the old and young twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. They're twisting the night away. Twisting the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks. She's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. They're twisting the night. Let's twist the one.
Thank you.
twisting the night away. Man, you ought to see her go, twisting to the rock and roll. Here you find the young and old, twisting the night away. Yeah, twisting, twisting, man, everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night.
The great Sam Cooke, the one and only Sam Cooke. That was a track that he actually recorded with the Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, you know, basically the studio musicians that were in Los Angeles, yeah, in Hollywood. Earl Palmer on drums on that track, though, in particular. It's always a treat to know when it's Earl Palmer, because he's a musical hero of mine. Speaking of musical heroes, for the past couple of shows, Patsy Cline seems to keep popping up.
Yeah.
This will be the last time we'll be hearing her, I'm afraid. With the tremendous crossover success of her previous two hit singles from the past couple of shows we did, I Fall to Pieces and Crazy, Patsy Cline had learned a very distinct lesson. Ballads, girl. Sing ballads. They became her bread and butter. And to capitalize on this, Cline and her producer, Owen Bradley, set about finding other songs that could work equally well in both markets, both, you know, basically pop and country. Their choices were both clever and appropriate. Cline recorded stunningly beautiful versions of classic songs such as San Antonio Rose and The Wayward Wind, I Love You So Much It Hurts, Cole Porter's True Love. Her last single came straight from songwriter Hank Cochran, who's the same guy who wrote I Fall to Pieces with Harlan Howard. It was an excellent choice. This is the song that was on the charts when her plane crashed into the side of a mountain and Patsy lost her life, sadly to say. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, we can all basically, send out some love and a tip of the hat to Patsy Cline for some fabulous music.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the records that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you. I've got your memory, or has it got me? I really don't know, but I know it won't let me be. I've got your class ring that proved you care, and it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got you. I've got your memory, or has it got me? Got your class ring that proved you cared. And it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got these little things, she's got you.
She only had a handful of pop hits, but her collection of recordings is extraordinary. I would challenge anybody, if you're not familiar with Patsy Cline, go ahead, go on a search, and you could probably spend a good 3 hours listening to her, a variety of her recordings, and you wouldn't find yourself not only not getting bored, you'd probably become totally enamored with her. That's how it worked for me. Anyway, amazing performer, Patsy Cline, with She's Got You.
She can emote.
Oh, yeah. Next up, speaking of being able to emote, Roy Orbison. Now, I spent my whole life believing that he wrote the song Dream Baby, How Long Must I Dream? But no, it was written by a woman named Cindy Walker, who I need to learn a little bit more about because we've already featured her in this series with one song. She wrote a couple of, nothing gigantic, except for maybe this song. I would admit, perhaps this song is a gigantic hit. But she wrote a song like Bubbles in My Beer. But she also wrote You Don't Know Me, the song that Ray Charles made famous.
Yes.
It's a pretty amazing song.
Yes.
And here she is back providing this one for Roy Orbison, one of the bigger hits of his career from the early 60s. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here is Roy performing Dream Baby, How Long Must I Dream? So many layers to that production. It's so easy to underrate a song like that. Think of it as a simple song lyrically and structurally. And then all these different layers come in, one on top of another. And next thing you know,
it's a great idea.
Yeah, you've got like an entire orchestra of pop musicians. Now, I'm talking a little bit with people like Patsy Cline about people that we don't get to hear enough of on the pop charts. But I don't think I could say that. I could apply that to any artist more than this next artist, whose name is Arthur Alexander. And he's a, I know he's a personal favorite of yours, Heidi. And I mean, I love him too, but quite frankly, sometimes fate really stinks. After a not too remarkable flash in the pan career in the early 60s, Arthur Alexander vanished from the charts. For the next three decades, he was considered a spent force, despite the various artists who were constantly interpreting his material. By the 90s, he was working as a school bus driver with little thought of returning to the music industry. At the behest of his old friend and producer, Rick Hall, down at, of course, at Muscle Shoals of Fame Studios, Alexander was persuaded to record Lonely, Just Like Me, his first collection of new material in 20 years, an album. 6 months before he could have the satisfaction of seeing Lonely, Just Like Me all over the critics' lists for the best album of 1993, he died of heart and kidney failure. In his lifetime, Alexander had only one top 40 hit, but a handful of his songs entered the mainstream with other artists serving as the conduit. Songs like Anna by the Beatles, Every Day I Have to Cry by the Bee Gees, You Better Move On by the Rolling Stones, all helped to boost the fledgling careers of these British artists who eventually became international superstars. Sadly, Alexander lost the publishing rights to his songs early on and didn't receive any of the profit that these recordings generated. As a black man from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, Alexander wasn't exactly empowered to negotiate a fair deal for himself. Rural Southern blacks who could not develop a particular sense of urbanity were usually doomed to a pretty tough life, and Alexander's business interests were ignored. Nevertheless, he never betrayed any sense of bitterness in his music. Judging from his singing style and the texture of his voice, Alexander was as much a country artist as a rhythm and blues singer. This would make him quite an anomaly in the racist South. When the Motown Review passed through Alexander's hometown on its first tour, the group members often feared for their lives and were shocked by the mistreatment and insults they faced. But they were only visitors. This is where Alexander lived. I mean, of course, the insults they faced, you know, the atmosphere had an impact on his style. But if, as many people believe, rock and roll is a cross between hillbilly, country, and rhythm and blues, then Alexander surely qualifies as a bona fide rock and roll original. Whether or not you subscribe to that theory, Alexander certainly did embody elements of each genre. His voice may have portrayed a country western influence, but his songwriting was pure soul. He is also credited with introducing the word girl as a form of address into the pop music lexicon. Imagine that.
Wow.
He's the guy that started addressing people as girl in songs. Few songwriters or artists, maybe with the exception of Al Green, have been able to duplicate the gentility.
Uh-oh.
Oops. My bad. The gentility that pervaded Alexander's music. Nearly every song that he wrote portrays a man who is unwilling to fight and who accepts his destiny with a zen-like discipline. Morality and decency are a subtext in almost all of his songs. This next track, You Better Move On, serves as a prime example of this. In it, Alexander tells the story of a character who was attempting to bird dog his only true love. Instead of getting excited, he remains cool and resigns himself to fate. He trusts that the girl will stay, but exerts no influence whatsoever. Listen to these lyrics. You ask me to give up the only love I've ever had. Maybe I would, but I love her so. I'll never let her go. You'd better move on. There's a certain majesty at work there.
Yeah.
Another man would just haul off and punch the daylights out of the guy,
yeah.
Right? The subtle conviction and self-control that Alexander displays in this lyric are typical of his writing style, from Anna to Go Home Girl. Overlooked for most of his life, his songs live on after his death, and he is sorely missed. On American Radio 90.3 WHBC, here is the legendary, great, one and only Arthur Alexander with You'd Better Move On.
You asked me to give up the hand of a girl I love. You tell me I'm not the man she's worthy that's up to her. Yes, and the Lord above. You better move on. Well, I know you can buy her fancy clothes and diamond rings, but I believe she's happy with me without those things. Still, you beg me to set her free, but my friend, that will never be. You better move on. I can't blame you for loving her, but can't you understand, man, she's my girl. I've ever had. Maybe I would, oh, but I love her so. I'm never gonna let her go. You better move on. You better move on. You better move on.
The sublime Arthur Alexander.
Beautiful.
If you don't know him, look him up. He's so
sure.
worth looking into. All
you
right.
Let us know.
Right. You know that I, every now and then, love to play a great miss. It's fun to play something to put things in perspective. Not every song has to be great, although it's wonderful when they are. But it's also kind of like, it's kind of great to play a couple of dumb ones to appreciate the great ones. And this is actually a dumb one that I kind of like. It's so dumb that it's good.
It goes full circle.
Right? Last year was the year of the twist, when Chubby Checker had that awesome hit, whose version I refused to play because he didn't write it. It was just a cover version and all that. But the Marvelettes at Motown had a huge hit with Please Mr. Postman, waiting for a letter to get that from the boyfriend, which was a sort of a mashed potato dance rhythm. Right? So now, I mean, the Marvelettes, you know, they're not, the people at Motown weren't stupid. They were trying to have a hit, right? In any way possible. So it came up that maybe we'll have the postman deliver the letter that she's waiting for. And we'll call the song Twistin' Postman.
Oh, yeah.
On American Radio 90.3, here are the Marvelettes with Twistin'
Genius.
Postman.
Sitting by the window, sad and blue, all because I haven't heard from you. And then my mama said, oh, no, no.
get a good feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before, no, no.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you right now that
ooh,
I believe, I really do believe that something's got a hold on me, yeah.
Oh, it must be love.
Oh, something's got a hold on me right now, child.
Oh, it must be love.
Let me tell you now, I've got a feeling, I feel so strange. Everything about me seems to have changed. Step by step, I got a brand new walk. I even sound sweeter.
Thing about Etta James, I mean, maybe you don't agree with me, but it seems to me like she's a bit neglected these days. And yet, whenever
Obama's neglected her.
Oh, that's real. Yeah, when they got
their inauguration, yes.
Yeah, they had other people to sing her theme song.
Yeah, they got
Bay. Yeah, Bay. But anyway, it seems like whenever anybody wants to sing, sound like a real true R&B singer, it's Etta who they imitate. And yet, you know, she's not as famous, and it's a drag because, I mean, obviously, she's a stunning talent. I ended up, like, after I wrote the book American Radio, which is, by the way, the source for almost every song that we select, I've revised it since it was published 20-some-odd years ago, and I added a lot of Etta James because I was one of those people. Yeah, I was one of those people that was overlooking her.
Hey, you're rectifying your mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you got tip of the hat. Speaking of which, King Curtis is another guy that normally like flew below the radar. I don't know if many people even remember much of him these days. I mean, Memphis Soul Stew, perhaps. Pretty awesome song. But years before that, he's the guy that played the sax break on Yakety Yak by the Coasters. He was Aretha Franklin's sax player. It's him playing on Respect. He could play everything. He was rhythm and blues, rock and roll. He loved to play funk and jazz. But as he said, is like, you know, he really loves to play rhythm and blues more than anything because I also like to live well. He knew he could get paid. So, yeah, he would do his time with people like Pretty Purdy and Richard T and Cornell Dupree. But when he had a chance to just get down and play some R&B and maybe get out a hit single, he was glad to do it. Here he is with one of his first hits, a song called Soul Twist on American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Mm-hmm.
talk about soul music. King Curtis with Soul Twist on that track.
Yeah.
Which is really just warming us up for where we're headed, because we've been playing a tremendous amount of soul music in this show, a little bit of country music, but you might notice that they're not that far apart. When you hear Roy Orbison singing Dream Baby, there's a bit of R&B in it, you know? And there's a little bit of country in some of the R&B that was happening around this time, but never more so than with Ray Charles. I mean, sometimes mixing musical styles is a lot like cross-breeding dogs. Every time you add another mix, vital characteristics that define the purity of the bloodline are lost. I get that.
There ain't nothing better than a mutt.
Right. You know, usually mutts make much better pets because of their friendly dispositions, right? The same thing happened when Ray Charles started singing country music classics. R&B purists might complain, and country purists might not recognize it, but the mix is undeniably pleasant. And here lies ample evidence, then, that purity of essence is not necessarily better than a mixture of styles. Ray Charles released the album Modern Sounds and Country Western Music.
Classic.
Sounded like a bad idea to most people when he came up with it. They would say things like, you don't mix molasses with vinegar. Well,
actually, that's how you make salad dressing.
Sometimes you do, right? You know? This song was written and originally recorded by Don Gibson, the same guy who recorded Oh Lonesome Me. Ray Charles recorded it, then buried his version near the end of side two of his album. It wasn't supposed to be a hit single. But then actor and Elvis Presley wannabe Tab Hunter released a version of it that was derived from Ray Charles' arrangement. So in order to head it off on the charts, ABC Paramount Rush released Ray Charles' version to compete. No contest. It went to number one and sat there for 5 weeks. It became the biggest hit of his long and varied career. Hunter's version never even charted. The B-side of Ray Charles' version was even awesome. It was a great version of Born to Lose. Single in its own right, but it stalled at number 41. Otherwise, I would have included it on this list. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Ray Charles.
I've made up my mind to live in memory of the lonesome time. I can't stop wanting you. It's useless to say. So I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday. Those happy hours that we once knew, though long ago, they still make me blue. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has stood still since we've been apart. So I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday's.
Those happy hours.
Those happy hours.
That we once knew.
That we
said I made up my mind to live in memories of the lonesome time. Sing a song, children.
I can't stop wanting you.
It's useless to say, so I'll just live my life of dreams of yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Every time I hear that song, I'm a little preschooler running around in knee pants. It takes me right back to being a little kid. I remember it.
I don't remember it, but I still have fond memories.
I was alive when it came out, and that was one of the jukebox songs that my parents would play in the basement that would more or less haunt me if I was in, I'd go to bed early. I was a little kid, so I'd go to bed, but my parents would sometimes stay up with their friends and play songs on the jukebox, and those songs became romanticized by me, deeply romanticized, and hearing that, I'll probably never get over it. And speaking of being that age and around this time, this is around the first time, I'm not even four yet, and I start hearing this guy named James Brown. You even see him on TV every now and then. Now, being a white middle-class kid, I mean little kid, from the suburbs, means that I wasn't exactly a good representative of James Brown's target audience. And about, 98% of what he was achieving and what he stood for was completely over my head. I'm being generous when I say 98%. It was probably more like everything. I saw what everybody else saw. I saw him on TV a few times and I was transfixed by his dancing. I got that. But for what I understood about his language and the style, I mean, he may as well have been from Saturn for all that I knew. And growing older, you get more and more, eventually, of course, this becomes James Brown, the man who basically exhorted his black audience to know themselves, feel good, be proud, get up, get into it, be involved, soul power, brother rap, say it loud, all that. And this is just like warming up. This is just the warm up for that. Before the Beatles, when he was still on the charts in 64, strongly on the charts with I Got You, I Feel Good. This predates that. And man, what an awesome track it is. From the summer of 1962, actually the spring, May 1962. It only went to number 35, but it did reach the pop charts and it reached my tiny little ears. Here's James Brown on American Radio 90.3 WHPC with Night Train.
All aboard for Night Train.
Yeah.
song is still stunningly cool. I just love every second of that track. Who do you think that is playing drums on that song?
Maceo Parker? I don't know. Who is that?
That's James Brown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He played his own drums on it. He had an idea for a groove, and he just said, look, I just... And he has, like, that really cool sort of, like, a slinky, unusual feel to it. It's, mm-hmm. it's very cool. So, setting up, let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. One more great miss. Now, I've had some fun and a little bit of, like, anger picking on Pat Boone. And he's back again. And he's up to his old tricks. He still isn't doing anything original.
Even predictable.
At this point in time.
Boring. At the same time.
And now he adds racism into the equation. In my mind. That's how I hear this. There, you know, he's ripped off everybody else's song and had big chart hits with it. Even here, that last track by James Brown, that reached number 35 on the pop charts, right? This next stupid song by Pat Boone goes top 10. It went to number 6. And it wasn't even his. He stole it from an artist named, well, the credited to David Hess, a song about Speedy Gonzalez. So he comes on and basically they just do all this. It's ridiculous. It's just outright ridiculous. They even brought Mel Blanc in from the Bugs Bunny cartoons to do the voice of Speedy Gonzalez. But it does, unfortunately, it doesn't help matters. Just more or less makes it worse, if you ask me. I just, to have this, to depict the Mexican Speedy Gonzalez as too lazy to get up and work. When he's called Speedy Gonzalez, he's supposed to be the fastest mouse in, right, the land. He's supposed, they turn it into racist. On American Radio 90.3 HBC, God darn it, here's Pat Boone.
It was a moonlit night in old Mexico. I walked alone between some old adobe haciendas. Suddenly, I heard the plaintive cry of a young Mexican girl.
La, la, la.
You better come home, Speedy Gonzales, away from Tannery Row. Stop all of your drinking with that floozy named Flo. Come on home to your adobe and slap some mud on the wall. The roof is leaking like a strainer. There's loads of roaches in the hall. Speedy Gonzales, why don't you come home? Speedy Gonzales, how come you leave me all alone?
Hey, Rosita, I have to go shopping downtown for my mother. She needs some tortillas and chili pepper.
Your dog is gonna have a puppy, and we're running out of coal. No enchiladas in the icebox, and the television's broke. I saw some lipstick on your sweatshirt. I smell some perfume in your ear. Well, if you're gonna keep on messing, don't bring your business back here. Speedy Gonzales, why don't you come home? Speedy Gonzales, how come you leave me all alone?
Hey, Rosita, come quick. Down at the cantina, they're giving green stamps with tequila.
Right?
When it was cool to pick on ethnic minorities.
It's really never cool.
No.
But they got away with it then.
It's still too soon for blackface, too.
Yeah.
Just for the record.
Exactly. It's a note to Pat Boone. Now, the other thing that's about a little bit offensive about that is you'll notice that there was like a reference about they got some Cokes in the icebox. He was like actually stealing lines from the next big hit from Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke had an idea for having a party. And I don't know how that happened, but I mean, on this next track, they both came out in the same month at the same time. And Sam Cooke wrote the song and Rush released it. So I have no idea how that happened. And what sounds like a simple song by Sam Cooke was a total blast in the studio. I mean, they had so much fun recording this song. They just said that the outtakes are hilarious. And it sounds simple, but it's an 18-piece backing group. 6 violins, 2 violas, 2 cellos, a sax player, a 7-piece rhythm section with 2 percussionists, 2 bassists, 2 guitars, and a piano. All of that must have been one heck of a party on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
We're having a party, dancing to the music played by the DJ on the radio. The cokes are in the icebox, popcorn's on the table. Me and my baby, we're out here on the floor. So Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby. Everybody's swinging. Sally's doing that twist now. If you take requests, I got a few for you. Play that song called Soul Twist. Play that one called I Know. Don't forget them mashed potatoes. No other songs will do. Let me tell you, Mr. DJ, keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby, having a party. Yeah. Everybody's swinging, oh, we're dancing to the music.
And just as the party is really beginning to kick off, I'm sorry to say we've only got time for one more song, folks. But we'll make it a good one, I promise.
Thank you.
Now, everybody, the Beatles always said it, that people were always giving them credit for having written Twist and Shout. They said, but that wasn't us, that was the Isley Brothers. Turns out that that's not right. It was actually originally recorded by a band called the Top Notes. It was written by Phil Medley and Burt Burns. Burt Burns gave it to Phil Spector to produce. And when he heard the final product, he was horrified. He was like, what did you do to my song? You ruined it. So Burt Burns decided that he would record a version again with the Isleys simply to demonstrate to Spector how the song should have sounded in the first place. Imagine that, putting Phil Spector in his place.
Boom.
In 1962.
Mic drop.
He did it handily. Mic drop indeed. Here's the Isley Brothers with Twist and Shout on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. Thanks, folks. Have a fabulous weekend. We'll see you next week.
You look so good.
You know you look so good.
Child, you making sickness.